You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of August 30th, 2016, and episode number 280. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, if you're in the chat room, you had the pleasure of listening to No Sugar Tonight by the Guess who are some fans of this network. They're listening hopefully tonight, maybe, who knows. So you got to get a plug out to the Guess Who and check them out at theguesswho.com and find them in concert. They're kind of a classic rock band. If you've you may never have heard of them, you might have heard of them. But if you hear their songs, you'll definitely know who they are. Another perk of listening in live in the chat room, you get to hear some cool stuff. And I've always been a fan of classic rock. We used to be on an AM station, WQTT. Well, this show was, and constantly putting a theme of classic rock tunes on, and I guess who would have fit right in? Great band. So check them out. Again, theguesswho.com. And what is going on paranormal? Well, we have some breaking news tonight about Wessie. I don't know if you've heard about this or seen about this. It's this kind of popular thing going on up in the state of Maine. So we're going to give a little update on that. And we're going to have some monkey business. Well, I think we have monkey business every week here on the show. And then, of course, we're going to be talking about that signal in space that was detected. Could it be aliens? We'll find out. We'll talk a little bit more about that, a little in depth about that. And we'll hear what SETI actually has to say about that. And we're going to talk about Bill Nye. Not the science guy, but Bill Nye, the skeptic guy. Yeah, well, he's going to get a taste of his own medicine tonight. Uh-oh. And El Ojo, need your assistance, por favor. We'll talk about the eye tonight here on the Paranormal News Insider. We'll also have the book of the week, which is going to tie in with the Bill Nye story. I try to do that. I try to tie in the book of the week with a story, something big that's going on. And I pulled this book out of storage. It's not my favorite book. I've probably thrown it up against the wall more times than I've read it. So it's still a good book. And we'll talk about why I'm throwing it around and why you should read it. Because you should read books. Don't just rely on the internet, folks. Read books. Trust me, there's a mountain of information in every book out there. Well, maybe not every book out there. Just the ones that you're hearing on this show. Because I tell it like it is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And what else? Well, tonight's show is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And IMHS is a pair of the educational outlets for Paranexus Anomalous Research Association. And if you want to become a member of Paranexus Anomalous Research Association, you got to have a little bit of a background in some sort of anomalous field, a certification or a degree in an academic field. And IMHS is a great place to start. It's where I got my degree. I was content on my bachelor's, but then I was kind of pushed to continue my education. And lo and behold, about a year and a half later, I got my master's and did a pretty thick pretty thick thesis and got my PhD. So it's worth it. Check it out. Again, metaphysicsinstitute.org. And for me, I'm still getting requests to go and do some stuff. I potentially have a convention I may be at in October. I don't know. I can't see past the next 2 weeks. I'll be out of town, out of the country, out in the West Coast, well up in the frozen tundra of Maine, or not Maine. Well, Maine's our next story, but up in Alaska. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm not really seeing past that right now. But potentially a convention early October, and definitely I'll be at the Westerville Public Library on October 27th. That's going to be talking about ghosts. I haven't talked about ghosts in a while. Well, since last year, October 27th, I've talked to cryptozoology and everything else, it seems like, in the this year. Mostly cryptozoology, but I'll be doing a ghost presentation. I'll be pulling some old evidence out of the closet. They demand to see evidence. It's kind of hard to do when there is no real proof of ghosts. But anyway, I'll do my best to entertain the folks down there at Westerville. And Westerville is actually northeast of Columbus, Ohio. So if you're in the area, stop on by. We'll go to Westerville Public Library and their website and register today. And I've been accepted to appear November 4th through the 6th at Bedford, Pennsylvania's Ghost Excavation Conference. It's the third Ghost Excavation Conference, and I've been at the first two, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be more science-y than anything. It's a serious conference. So it's not just like pictures of ghost investigations and pictures of orbs and stuff like that. This is more or less people who have created or have thoughts and ideas about different methodologies toward the investigation of ghosts. And buddy Brandon Masala will also be on hand talking about his new methodology that he shared with me a little while ago. And we've talked about former group member of Ohio Paranormal Investigation Network, which I ran from 1996 to 2011 when I decided to hang up my acronym forever. Great guy, very knowledgeable. He actually worked over in Scotland doing some parapsychology research, and very brilliant guy. So what else? Well, I'm currently also writing an article for a cryptozoology magazine. Well, I'm actually not really writing it. I've been thinking about writing it, but I better get my butt in gear and get that written. When I get that written, we'll talk more about that. And also, I made this announcement last week that the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure will return next year. I'm excited about that. I had a lot of fun out there. Out in the woods, even though it was wet, rainy, I had a duel with Jay Bakuchin. There can be only one Jay. And next year, The Gathering is on. If you, that's some inside stuff there. You may know what The Gathering is, and there can be only one. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. Next year, May 5th through the 7th, 2017, we're doing it all over again. Farmington, Pennsylvania. 2 days of speakers. That's insane. We had a heck of a time in 1 day. And all this, the same guys are returning. I think he added a couple more people. Steve Coles, awesome. Dave Dragason, awesome. Stan Gordon, completely awesome. And I feel kind of awkward being in that group of people, but it was a lot of fun. And I'll bring my A game like I did last year. And next year, I'll also be, man, I'm going to talk about this every week leading until May. Well, yes, I am. St. Albans Sanatorium next year, May 19th and 20th in Radford, Virginia. Looking forward to that one as well. And well, heck, we're just going to jump into crypto news. Enough about me, right? Well, big news today, but we're going to kind of recap a little bit here. If you haven't heard about Wessie, it's this snake sighting in Maine that happened in the middle of June. And then, was it June, July? I forget. It's been going on and on. Well, police found this, supposedly saw this snake, and supposedly saw it eating a beaver. So there's been a handful of sightings, only a handful of sightings. And there was a recent article that sheds more light on the initial sighting of the large snake. Pun intended there, sheds. You get it? Get it? Okay. Maybe not. That's okay. It states that a woman in a car was spooked by the sight of the large snake. Westbrook Police Captain Sean Lally said about the sighting, quote, "She said it was as big as a truck and had the head the size of a basketball," unquote. Well, just after the skin was found a week ago last Saturday, another witness has stepped forward with a photograph he swears is the Penobscot python known as Wessie itself swimming across the river. Earl White Jr. snapped the photograph as he was about to start work picking up garbage in the park. White also states that he met photographers from National Geographic that claims to have found a hole where they believe the snake may be. Well, I don't know about that. We haven't heard any word about National Geographic making any sort of announcements. But, hey, he works there. Maybe he has inside information. He states they plan on bringing a thermal camera back to the area and kayaking to the spot in search of Wessie. Again, no word on that. That was, I think, last week. I'm going to share that photograph in the chat room here in a second, but it ties into some of this new stuff. So I'll give you one story all in one link that you can see this picture and hear about this new news. Now, some experts feel that the snake could be a large rat snake and not a python, as many have thought so far. And officials in Kittery, Maine, which is south of Westbrook and near Portsmouth, Maine, near the border of New Hampshire, they are on the hunt for a 7-foot Colombian red-tailed boa constrictor that escaped from its enclosure. Now, this is known. They just can't find this thing. Neighbors were warned about the snake's escape, and game wardens and a local herpetologist have been called in to locate it. I think I've said the word herpetologist more in the last week than I have my entire life. But this today's news, just announced like 4 hours ago, I get updates. My phone goes nuts. I have like 50 alerts anytime anything hits Google. I get these announcements. But anyway, just announced today, the skin found recently near the Penobscot River has been identified. Drum roll, please, anybody? You got a drum kit? Okay, no drum kit. But anyway, the skin found by the Penobscot River has been identified of that as an anaconda. What? Not a python. It's an anaconda. Well, this is according to John Plasek, a herpetologist, of course he is, from the University of Texas. He's a longhorn, who identified the skin through genetic testing. Westbrook, Maine police still don't know if the skin is actually from the snake that was sighted, known as Wessie, or if it was planted, not planted like in the ground, but just put there for display purposes, which a lot of people think that that skin was planted, that this is not the snake that's actually roaming around, because there was nothing heard about it for over a month. And then all of a sudden we get the skin, and now the story is huge. It's the biggest story in cryptozoology this year, and it's a huge story. Now, if a plane wouldn't have lost its engine, it still would be probably the biggest story in the news right now. Now, experts have determined that the skin is from, now, the skin was found, it was measured at 12 feet, if you remember this detail. But experts have determined that the skin that was, identified as this anaconda was from a 8 to 9 foot long anaconda, which makes it a juvenile. A juvenile. Yikes. 8 to 9 feet. Well, anaconda refers to a group of South American snakes and typically about the green anaconda. It's kind of one of the catch-all words like cougar or panther. These are some of the heaviest and longest snakes in the world, typically reaching 15 to 16 feet long. Holy smokes. Maybe it is as big as a truck. While these snakes are not venomous, they will bite and hold on to you while they crush the life out of you by constriction. And let me throw this out. Here's your science fact of the week. Venomous refers to something that bites you and inflicts some kind of poison or venom into your bloodstream to help it in the either defense of the animal or essentially to eat you or kill you or whatnot. So that's venomous. Now, poisonous. A poisonous snake would be something that would make you sick if you ate it. A lot of people use those two terms simultaneously, but it doesn't mean the same thing. Venomous means bite you, hurt you. Poisonous, you bite it, and it makes you sick. So don't be eating poisonous snakes. It's gross. So a fully grown anaconda, 15 to 16 feet long. These things could eat deer if they wanted to. You've probably seen those pictures of these large animals like alligators coming out through the side of a snake. Well, those are anacondas. Those are the big guys. They're the largest and heaviest snakes in the world. Yikes. And by the way, I just researched this too in the short time between getting home from work and grabbing a quick nap. Why am I telling you all this? Well, anyway, and coming on the air, it's actually illegal to own an anaconda in the state of Maine. So the plot thickens. Where did this anaconda come from? This could answer why they dumped this thing off in the woods. Maybe. It's illegal. That's crazy. So no word yet from, he did kind of comment a couple of times about this. Wessie P. Thon on Twitter, if he or she is changing the Twitter handle to Wessie A. Conda, he says no, he's going to stick with Wessie P. Thon for now. And no word either if Wessie drives a Honda or listens to workout tapes by Fonda. He does say, however, that he is a fan of red beans and rice. He said that about an hour ago. So the plot thickens. Is this really real? You know, and I have to comment, I have to say, we talked about this last week. This may not actually even be a snake out in there. People may have not even seen this thing. It could just be a figment of people's imagination because the first witness may not have actually seen what she thought she saw. The police may not have seen what they thought they saw. Because of the excitement of potentially finding a snake, it was in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, supposedly a cold-blooded creature, which doesn't really feed at night, is eating this beaver. They don't really eat at night. They're a little bit, you know, they rely on heat. And the water in Maine, I don't care if it's been 100 degrees every day, the water in Maine is cold. Cold. So I don't know how active the snake really is. And for it to eat something in the middle of the night, that's kind of weird. And then this this guy here, let me throw this link in the chat room here for you guys. You can check out this. There's a picture in this link of this guy who snapped this picture. He was getting ready for work to clean up the park. And he saw this thing swimming in the water. Not sure if that's Wessie or not, but it's sure going to go down in folklore. This is the biggest story of the news. Or the year in the news for the paranormal stuff here. And we're following it minute by minute. Now, if anything else breaks during the week, I'm not going to hold on to it. I didn't really have enough time to really throw anything out there because I just saw it before I came on the air. So I wanted to make sure that you guys heard it. But if anything else breaks, anything big breaks between now and next week, you're going to hear about it on social media. I'll talk about it. And lately, the last few months, I've just been pumping out stories that I've talked about during the show the following week and kind of fallen away from actually giving you guys new news or breaking news. So I'll be passing along a little bit more information, especially about this story, because I feel that this is really important. This is a big story. It's a big story going on right now. Could be the story of the year. Could be the number one story. The number one paranormal news story of 2016. And not looking forward to that. I mean, that's a long way away to my countdown. A lot could happen between now and then as well. So what else? Well, we got some monkey business. And like I said, of course, we always have monkey business here on the show, especially in the chat room when Dita is causing trouble, which she always is. She starts everything. The police department in Bells Falls, Vermont, which is a city right on the border with New Hampshire, reported a monkey sighting on its Facebook page last Tuesday. That sounds like a big deal, but you know, in this day and age, it doesn't. I mean, lots of weird stuff is posted on Facebook, memes, all kinds of things, people attacking people, making fun of Johnny. Whatever happens, it's always on Facebook. Everyone's dirty laundry. But not usually monkeys. So it was reported that a man saw a monkey on Route 121 coming from the river near Back Westminster Road. The police department also asked if anyone had any information about the monkey or other possible sightings. Simple enough, you know, just throw it on your Facebook page and see what happens. It's come in handy a few times this year. We talked about the Men in Black there. I think that was in Kansas where police said, hey, we find you. You're going to jail. And then there were no sightings. So Facebook can work if you use it the right way. But unfortunately, this one kind of backfired. Thursday morning, the post was suddenly deleted off of their Facebook page at Bellows Falls, Vermont Police Department. Was the monkey found? Nope. The police department deleted the post due to an overwhelming response by the media for requests for information. About a monkey? One guy sees a monkey and the media goes nuts? Well, of course they do. Bellows Falls police chief told NBC5 that things, quote, have gotten out of hand, unquote. Well, much of this is obviously due to the popularity of the current Wessie story that I just talked about. And being in the same region, the media is hungry for similar stories that might bring more attention to their broadcasts, sell some more cars, or, you know, could be just a distraction from other things that are going on in the news as well. So cryptid is big right now, especially down east, as they call it. And so we'll see what happens. I haven't heard anything about this monkey, this mystery monkey. One sighting, so who knows? Not completely out of the realm of possibility. Plenty of monkey sightings in Ohio and Pennsylvania. I don't know about New Hampshire, though. That's kind of odd. If you're missing your monkey, somebody saw it. So you can go up there and look for it. UFO news? Well, yeah. Not missing my monkey. He's right at home. UFO news this week. The big news. I mean, Wessie is big news. But this story here, it's coming across as the biggest story, like, pretty much ever. But we'll talk about this. We'll get into depth. And if you've heard this, you kind of know where the story is going. And if you haven't heard it, well, I haven't heard the sound, so I don't know what it sounds like. But anyway, SETI, known as the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, has made the news this week with an announcement that they have found a signal from a potential intelligent civilization. And it's not New York City. The word hit the streets on August 27th when Paul Glister published a post on the Centauri Dreams website entitled an Interesting SETI Candidate in Hercules. An Interesting SETI Candidate in Hercules. In the post, Glister cautioned that no one claims that this is the work of an intelligent civilization, but that this signal warrants further study and continuous documentation. So what did the media do? The media automatically put up intelligent civilization found through mystery signal. Of course they did. They twisted everything around, as they always do. But it's possible that this news could potentially be bigger than the WOW signal of 1977, one of my favorite little stories since I was able to visit that location earlier this year. Since we knew, we kind of had an idea of where the WOW signal came from, but now this one here, we definitely know the area. We know the sun, the star where this came from, and the technology used to determine it light years better than when the signal was detected in Columbus, Ohio for the WOW signal. Light years better. Yes, that's another joke. Okay, you can laugh. Feel free. Those are free, by the way. This new signal was detected by the Rattan 600 radio telescope located in a city that I cannot pronounce in Russia. And the signal was detected back on May 15th of 2015. So why are we not hearing about it until now? Well, talk about that in a second here. The signal originated from a star known as HD 164595. You got to get a better name than that. That won't look good on t-shirts. It's roughly 95 light years away in the constellation Hercules. And that's from our perspective here on this little chunk of mud and dirt on Earth. So from our perspective, that's where it's at. Now, there is already one known planet in that sun system, which unfortunately is not really hospitable. It's kind of Neptune-ish. Not making fun of you, Neptune, but it's Neptune-ish, like our planet Neptune, and probably not capable of harboring intelligent life. Maybe life, but not intelligent life. It's just not not conducive at all. But there could be other planets not yet known in that area. Now, this work will further be discussed on September 27th at the 67th International Astronautical Congress, the IAC, in Mexico. And hopefully SETI or somebody else can monitor this signal to help determine the validity of the signal and maybe find out if it's something logical or not. Now, again, this could be the most important story, not only of this week, but the most important in human history, if it's actually true. But that being said, I wouldn't get too excited about it. Yes, and here comes the bad news. From the SETI at Home message board. SETI at Home is, if you don't know what SETI at Home is, it's you can do SETI at home. That's essentially what that is. You can crunch data and information in pockets, or I should say packets of information that are sent to your computer. Your computer uses its CPU and burns out over time. And interprets that data and sends it back to SETI. Yeah, it burned out one of my computers a long time ago. I've used to do SETI at home, but it really wears down your computer pretty fast. It hogs up a lot of RAM. But it's fun. It feels like you're contributing to something bigger than you. And you're helping the computers break down all this information over time. So SETI at home, on the message board, a post was made yesterday by Eric Corpella, who is the volunteer moderator for the site, project administrator, project developer, and project scientist for SETI, probably among other things, probably makes coffee for everybody too, which he has been a part of since 1999. Well, he says, and this is directly from their message board, and you can check it out at, I don't know, setiathome.com. I don't know what the, I can't remember the website. Anyway, he says, I'm sure that many of you have seen the news reports of a SETI signal detected from star HD 164595. I was one of the many people who received the email with the subject, quote, candidate SETI signal detected by Russians from star HD 164595 by virtue of Rattan 600 radio telescope, unquote. Since the email did come from known SETI researchers, I looked over the presentation. I was unimpressed. In one out of 39 scans that passed over, STAR showed a signal, this is his words, not mine, at about 4.5 times the mean noise power with a profile somewhat like the beam profile. Of course, SETI at home has seen millions of potential signals with similar characteristics, but it takes more than that to make a good candidate. Multiple detections are a minimum criterion. Because the receivers used were making broadband measurements, there's really nothing that about this signal that it would distinguish it from a natural radio transient, stellar flare, active galactic nucleus, microlensing of a background source, you know, those typical kind of explanations. There's also nothing that could distinguish it from a satellite passing through the telescope field of view. All in all, it's relatively uninteresting from a SETI standpoint. But of course, it has been announced to the media. Reporters won't have the background to know it's not interesting because the media has it. And since this business runs on media, everyone will look at it. Everyone's looking at this. Someone will look at it from Arecibo and will be along for the ride. And I'll check the SETI at home database around that position and we'll all find nothing. It's not our first time at this rodeo, so we know how it works, unquote. So it's not good news there, folks. And before I finish that story, I want to remind you, you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're talking science, kids. We're talking signals from outer space, man. Well, the other bad news about this signal. Now, the signal was first documented back in May of last year. Again, May 15th of last year. But it hasn't been repeated yet. That's not good news either. This does point toward a logical scenario of basic space noise, potentially a satellite crossing in front of this radio telescope. So it's the media's kind of made a bigger deal out of this than what it really is. But if it's true, yes, it will definitely be the biggest story that we've ever had. I mean, the wow signal was a huge story back in 1977. But if this is true, it's a big deal. But it doesn't look like it's going to pan out with not being repeated. But hopefully, they'll keep listening, especially in that particular area of the Hercules constellation and that star, HD whatever, get a real name. But we probably won't hear much about this this story in the next few weeks. But I'm sure it'll pop up, you know, I don't know. Maybe a couple months from now it'll pop up about somebody has more information. And they're going to talk about this at this meeting I mentioned on September 27th. So maybe they'll set aside some time, some telescope time, which is expensive. It's extremely expensive. And who knows, maybe somebody will, start a Kickstarter campaign and pay attention to it. Who knows? So ghost news. We got some evil news here, kind of frustrating news. If you listen to the show, you know I'm a little skeptical. You got to be. You have to be, especially with ghosts, because it's so easy to believe. Everybody's wrapped in about belief systems and the culture of all this stuff. It's so easy to believe, but it's very difficult to actually stand back and be objective about ghosts sometimes. And we need to be. And that's why I tend to be a little bit more skeptical of things, especially with claims of sightings and claims of ghosts and claims of all kinds of stuff, because it's far too easy to believe in all this. It's harder to be critical, especially of your own information. And this kind of the story that I'm going to talk about here, it ties in with the book of the week. I had this book and it frustrates me, this book, the book of the week, but it was going to come up eventually. And when I saw the story, poof, this is perfect. So I try to get, you know, the book of the week that supplements one of the stories during the week. But again, it's not always possible. This one, perfect. First, the story. Now, Haley Stevens, we've talked about her before. She's a ghost investigator from the United Kingdom, and she's a little skeptical. She's actually really skeptical, very skeptical. But she's still in the ghost field. So every now and again, she does defend the field. And this particular story caught my eye. She wrote a blog, the title of an article she posted that read, Bill Nye on Ghosts. Well, many of you know who Bill Nye is. He's the science guy who provided education through that television show, Bill Nye the Science Guy, from 1993 to 1998. Well, Nye is also a skeptical guy. He's very skeptical. He's pretty much a hardcore skeptic. So I wasn't sure where this post would go. You'd think the two of them would be peas in a pod. They get along. They kind of see things kind of the same way through the skepticals of life. But Haley's post is in reaction to a video that was posted of Nye where he answered a viewer's question, which essentially asked, what happens when we die and are there ghosts? There's a lot of other questions, but that kind of sums it up. Now, Haley pointed out that his first mistake with his answer, where he categorized ghosts with psychics. Now, Haley states, quote, a parapsychologist will study psychic claims, but typically not ghosts and haunted houses. A paranormal researcher, like me, or like her, she says, will research ghosts and haunted houses, but not psychics, unquote. She also reacts to Nye, stating that skeptical organizations have found no evidence of ghosts, even through investigations, by saying that these investigations routinely examine the evidence provided as well as evaluate the situation, but no organization of the skeptical kind has ever actively searched for ghosts or attempted to collect evidence of them. Basically, that way of saying they go into a ghost situation looking for a logical explanation and not really looking for evidence of ghosts. They're looking to disprove everything, which, yes, as a ghost researcher, you should look for logical explanations, but not have the expectation or automatically assume that one is going to find one. Because unfortunately, that's how a lot of skeptics approach this. They already have the answer before they set foot, and they're looking for overwhelming information that's going to provide data in the other way, which they'll never accept anyway. So their minds have made up. And this kind of goes hand in hand with true believers or paranormal groups that have an investment in finding evidence, such as those that have a profound amount of equipment on hand, Pelican cases full of equipment. That investment in equipment tends to have an investment in finding evidence. So they kind of made up their minds too, that they find every creak and groan of every board is automatically a ghost. So that's your kind of your, what I call unwavering ends of denial. Either one of those sides is really approaching things incorrectly. And Bill Nye, well, he then goes on to talk about Harry Houdini, and this one kind of made me pound my fist on my desk here. You know who Harry Houdini is, the famous magician. Now, he was supposed to contact someone after he passed away, but he has still not done this to this day. I don't know why Bill Nye was referring to Harry Houdini. I guess he was trying to be tricky about this whole ghost thing and just try to tie it up with one cute little bow. Well, then he mentions a code word that Harry Houdini shared with his mother that no one knows since it was a secret. Well, while many skeptics are also magicians, Nye apparently is not part of that club. Now, many people know that the code was actually published in a book in the late 1920s, just prior to a hoax that included Houdini's wife, Bess, who, by the way, was also in on the code word. Yes, Houdini's mother did know the code word, but it was also created between him and his wife, Bess. And it was a code word because it was you had to know how to solve these words. He would say certain words, and you would have to have this code to decipher these words into another word or words. And that's how he was supposed to reveal himself from the other side. Now, Nye also said, quote, your friends who believe in ghosts, you can outwit them. You're ahead of them because you'll not waste energy looking around for ghosts, unquote. Ouch. And to which Haley responds, quote, not believing in ghosts does not make you a superior person, unquote. Well, she also says, quote, people who believe in ghosts aren't stupid, unquote. That's kind of debatable. Anyway, for some people. She summarizes her post by saying that it would have been nice if Nye approached the subject a little more open-minded and avoided dismissing the topic completely and could have provided some insight into the topic instead of attempting to throw it in the trash. Those were my words. But that's kind of what I felt. And it was cool to see Haley kind of lash out at a skeptic who didn't know his Harry Houdini information, didn't know Rosabelle Believe, didn't know that the code was out there already. It was actually published in a book a long time ago. So if you're going to, you know, tout facts to prove your stance on something, at least have the correct facts and don't lash out at people. And, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of the attitude of a lot of hardcore skeptics out there to completely dismiss this stuff without taking into account some of the, and I'm not going to say information or evidence, but just their stance on things. It's belief based, just as like believing in ghosts is belief based. But two wrongs don't make a right. And to approach things like that is ignorant. It's ignorant to take that stance, just as it's ignorant to not accept logical information when things are going crazy. If you're not able to stand back and see things for what is truly happening, instead of just jumping to the conclusion or making the assumption that a ghost is responsible for things, that is also ignorant. So again, unwavering ends of denial is what I call it. When you have a hardcore skeptic and you have a true believer, neither one of them are really willing to waver on their approach to things. Both of those are dangerous. And they say that there's no wrong way to investigate and there's no right way to investigate. Well, hogwash. If you're allowing your beliefs to get in the way and you're making assumptions, well, that's wrong. It's just wrong. So, yeah. So that ties in with the book of the week. The book of the week was, how can I put it? It's written by a guy that, I mean, I respect him because he's a scientist, but he just frustrates the living heck out of me. He just drives me nuts. I don't know why he drives me nuts. It's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just, it's just something that I've gotten used to because of this particular person's approach to things, his belief on things. But he's very well respected. And the book is by a guy named Joe Nickell. And Joe Nickell, he touts himself as the world's only professional paranormal investigator. Okay, well, he says that because a lot of people call themselves professional paranormal investigators. Not professional because they get paid for it, but professional because they understand the field. They understand the terminology. They understand the parapsychological point of view. They understand a lot of different diverse things. And they present themselves in a professional manner. But he touts himself as professional because, well, he gets paid to do it. And he gets paid to do it. So if you want to get paid, kids, pay attention. If you want to get paid to investigate ghosts, which a lot of people ask me this question, how much money do you make from investigating ghosts? I don't make anything. I don't make a cent. But if you want to make money, become a skeptic, because they actually make money from doing that. But give up the dream of finding ghosts, because they're not going to find them, because they're not looking for them. He's been investigating for, over 40 years now. He's a full-time investigator, and he doesn't just research ghosts. He looks at Sasquatch, vampires, all kinds of paranormal and supernatural themes. And he's been around for a while. You've probably heard of him. And, the book of the week this week is, let me throw this in the chat room real quick. The Science of Ghosts is the book of the week this week by Joe Nickell. And I have to beat Dita, so I have to get the cover in there. There it is. The Science of Ghosts, Searching for Spirits of the Dead. So the title alone, The Science of Ghosts, would make you think that you're going to learn a lot of stuff about science and about ghosts, and it's all going to tie together, and it's going to help you out in the field. It's not. This book is not about that at all. This book is actually, I would change the title from The Science of Ghosts to How to Completely Dismiss Ghosts Without Even Attempting to Research It, because that's pretty much what Joe does in this book. It's really frustrating to read it because, you know, I get the skeptical side, and I appreciate people like Benjamin Radford, who now Ben will take it and he'll give you the same kind of information. But if you present something to him that is good, that it stands up to scrutiny, you have your documentation, he'll listen to you. Or Joe, I don't think he would. Now, a lot of people will argue with me about that, because there's a lot of people that do respect Joe Nickell, like I respect Benjamin Radford. But I don't know. Everything I read from Joe is just so over the top skeptical, like hardcore. It's cool to be skeptical. I have nothing against skeptics. I've had work published twice in skeptical magazines. Plan on having more. I get the Skeptical Inquirer in my mailbox every couple of months. So I get it. I'm cool. I'm down with skepticism. I get it. I'm not bashing it, but you got to draw the line. When you write a book like this, it's a huge book. It's like, geez, oh man. A lot of good resources, though, I have to admit. Great information. It's well over 400 pages, 408, 9. Yeah, it looks like 9, 10. Well, 412, including the index and everything at the end of it. But he spends a majority of this time just basically bashing every single aspect of ghosts, from television show Ghost Hunters to a lot of famous cases, which a lot of them do deserve that. A lot of them do deserve that from a lot of information here. Some of it's just not even worth reading, but there is a lot of good information here that that Joe does provide you, and it is worth the read. It is worth the read if you're a paranormal investigator. Yes, it's very frustrating to read, and it does get me mad every time I thumb through this book, and I had a hard time reading it without throwing it across the room, like I mentioned earlier, the first time. But it does provide a lot of good information, and if you are willing to be an open-minded investigator or want to be a little bit more skeptical of your work and scrutinize what you do out there in the field, this is a great book to read because it's a great primer for how the skeptics will view you. And it's a great book to kind of get you in that mode of thinking of how to think a little bit more skeptical and be a little bit more objective of your work and how to step away from the tools and how to just make less assumptions about things and how to approach things potentially a little different than what we do, because what we do is not good. This field is not headed in the right direction. And I'll say it, it's not. But this book does provide some good groundwork for the skeptical view towards ghosts. But don't expect it to explain ghosts. This isn't a scientific book on explaining what ghosts are. It's pretty much what ghosts aren't. And it does kind of tear apart the ghost field each and every page. And every page you flip to, you have hope, and then your dreams get crushed. But the appendix has some great information, a lot of great terminology explained about a lot of stuff, and there's just so much information here. It is a good resource. It does explain a lot of things. It does talk a lot of again, cases and stories and people involved. It does have a huge section on psychics, and I don't understand. Again, Bill Nye did the same thing, where skeptics take psychics and ghosts and throw them all in the big bowl, and they think they're all the same thing. Well, they're kind of related, but they're not the same thing. It'd be you know, the same as talking about kangaroos and snakes. Yeah, they're animals, but they're not related. They're animals. They live in the woods or whatever, but it's not the same thing. So I don't know why they do that, but Joe Nichols, The Science of Ghosts, Searching for Spirits of the Dead, is this week's book of the week. Read it. Use it as a doorstop. Either way, you know, I can't bash it completely. It is a good book, and it does provide a lot of great information about skepticism and about skeptical approaches to the field, which, again, yes, we need that. We need that. So, other news, last little story I have here tonight is about El Ojo. El Ojo. And if you speak Spanish, that's the eye. My Spanish isn't all that great. You could check it out. I'm going to throw this little linky dinky in the chat room. And if you're missing out on the chat room, you're missing out on the chat room. If you're listening live, that's cool. I have no problem with that. You're listening to this as a podcast. You're listening to it recorded off of Podbean, off of iTunes, off of, I don't know, wherever you're listening to, that's cool. Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes, anywhere, everywhere. I appreciate it. The show has kind of expanded a lot. There's a lot more listeners. Every month I'm getting more and more downloads. And I'm not obsessed or in love with my stats. I don't quote them to people or show them off on Facebook or anything like that. But, you know, I keep some attention because, you know, hey, if no one's listening to the show, the chat room is empty, and I'm just sitting here talking to my computer, mumbling to myself, then it's time to utilize my time in a different manner. This does take away from a lot of other things I'd like to be doing, writing books or doing other research or putting an extra day of kayaking in the week. A lot of other things I'd like to do, but I have a passion for what I do, and hopefully that comes through in the research that I do for the show. And I know you guys appreciate it because my downloads are getting more and more, and I'm really surprised. I'm really, really happy with the show and how it's evolved here on this new network, being not even, well, almost a year, I guess. I guess I'm coming up on a year on WCJV. So that's cool. And I wasn't sure when I started if I was going to do this. You know, I was going to give myself a few months, maybe 6 months, to see, hey, is this going to take off? Is this going to work? And here it is about a year from now. And I have a vacation coming up, but I don't want to take time off. You know, I want to be, I forget where we're going to be on Wednesday, but I want to do a live show from Alaska, but it's not going to work. I can't do it. But I love this show. I love providing this research and information. Yes, it is a little skeptical at times, but again, you have to be. We have to be critical of this information. We can't just believe everything and anything that we read in the news. I mean, goodness, it makes me sick when I read about I wasn't going to talk about this story, but I'm going to just mention it about this Southwest Airlines plane, Flight 3472. I have that number burned into my brain from doing research on this. Now, somebody said that somebody reported on Twitter that they lost 4 minutes and that people saw bright lights in the sky and there was no explosion. They think that they were abducted by aliens. No, it did not happen. I've read personal accounts of about 12 people that were on the plane. I saw a lot of tweets on Twitter. I used code, different words to search for this information. Nobody said anything about missing time. Nobody posted anything about bright lights. Nobody reported this. It's not a cover-up. Nobody deleted anything as far as I know. But this was not true. And it makes me sick that now this is going global. People are reporting this from this original story, this original person that wrote this. Now it's going global that this is a fact. It's not a fact. This is just somebody's pipe dream and wanted this story to go big. They're also saying that different things about the explosion of the engine. Well, there was no explosion, but there was a loud explosion-like sound heard, and shrapnel punctured part of the plane that decompressed the cabin and everything. So it was kind of an explosion. Now, it was just the engine cowl. It's real expensive. Well, I'm sure it was expensive, but it's really simple to explain this. It's just the cowl came loose and essentially just exploded. But it wasn't an explosion as we know it. But it just, when a plane is going through the air at 500 miles per hour, there's a lot of vibration. There's a lot of friction from air, and it's not just gliding through the air. If you've flown in a plane, you know it. You get little bumps and stuff. Well, this just jarred this thing loose, and this thing just turned into shrapnel instantly. And at that speed, at that altitude, it's going to cause some damage. But it's got nothing to do with UFOs. It's just a freak accident. And for somebody to make this claim really irritates me. And I don't know why I was just going off about that story, but it just irritates me. But this story here, this is an interesting story. The El Ojo Project, a team based in Buenos Aires, Argentina, has been doing some production work in a particular area that's really, really freaky. And that's my word. It's got some interesting paranormal phenomena attached to it. And they were going to film an upcoming horror movie based on some of this stuff. It's kind of like urban legend or folklore, but they consider it true stories. But they also found something else strange when surveying the land, the area around all these sightings that have taken place in this kind of a, I don't know how many square miles, but it's interesting. They show where all these particular stories are from, and it's this little grid area. But right in the middle of all this area is this thing called El Ojo, or the eye. Now, the eye is a large circular area measuring 130 meters across that is floating within a larger area. So it's this big chunk of land that's floating. And the land itself seems to be nearly a perfect circle. The group claims this is unseen in nature. As I read, I got an email directly from a guy named Sergio Neuspiller, the president of Full Dimension Entertainment, which is producing the footage of upcoming research investigations. Now, if I had money, I was able to just travel at will. I've been invited down there to actually help them research this. They want my help. I don't think I can do that. I can't just up and take a couple of weeks off and go down to Buenos Aires, Argentina. That would be fun. I'd love to roam the jungles down there, but probably not going to happen. My research shows that the floating islands, while rare, are actually a natural phenomena. According to Wikipedia, I know it's Wikipedia, but still, it's Wikipedia. They, some good information there. These floating islands are sometimes referred to as tussocks, flotons, or suds. And these natural floating islands are composed of vegetation growing out on a buoyant mat of plant roots. While this might explain what it is, it's still mysterious. So there's still a little bit of mystery to this anyway, because it does happen in South America. But, Mexico, it's been reported some places in South America. But it's just weird. It's just random. It's just right in the middle of nowhere. And you can see it move over time. If you go to Google Earth and you get this, and there's this little thing, that the dial that you can tune back and forth through time, historical photographs of particular areas, you can see the circle move around. It's really, really weird. I don't think it's that big of a mystery, but it's still something that should be researched. Now, they have a Kickstarter campaign, so they need your support. The Eye Project needs your help. Now, again, no matter if it's a natural phenomena or not, I don't think it's paranormal, but it does deserve more research. Now, the reason for this Kickstarter campaign is it's geared to raise funds to continue research and investigate the strange eye of floating land. And as with these campaigns, you can receive perks based on what you donate. They do plan on bringing in scientists who will be able to better determine what this is and how it was formed. And it's not cheap to get out to this area. There is civilized areas close to this, but it's essentially out in the middle of a jungle and obviously swampland, because that's how it's formed. So it's very difficult to get out there. And I'll post this link in the chat room, and I'll also post it on social media probably tomorrow. You can see it on Google Maps where this area is. Let me throw this in the chat room real quick here. And we'll get that to you. So you can check it. Well, the link didn't work. Well, you can just copy and paste that. I guess it should work. It shows where this thing is in Buenos Aires. And you can check it out and judge for yourself what you think this is. And we'll keep an eye on this. It's the Kickstarter campaign. Let me throw that in the chat room too. At least that link should work. The Kickstarter campaign is they're always cool. I think they're trying to raise $50,000, which isn't a whole lot of money in this day and age, to get the camera equipment out there, to get the scientists out there, to get people out there. And if you put enough money into it, you can go too, if you're interested in such a thing. It sounds great. I'd love to go out there and reach. They're going to dive down and look underneath it too, which is awesome. Maybe they'll find some anacondas. I don't know. But we'll definitely keep an eye on that. And I appreciate the email from them, from Sergio of Full Dimension Entertainment. And I look forward to if they produce something. It's interesting. It's an interesting phenomena. And you heard about it here first. Wow. So you'll always remember when you hear about El Ojo, you'll always remember, hey, I heard it on the Paranormal News Insider with Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, you did. So, wow. It's already 8 o'clock. Well, time for my nap. Time for me to eat dinner and go to bed. So, that being said, I mentioned conferences, conventions, and things. If you have any information about any event and would like to hear it on the show or see it on the website, which is again, one of the best, I think, collections of paranormal conferences and conventions out there. Let me know. Insider at paranewsinsider.com. Go to paranewsinsider.com. I got a contact page. Hit me up, as they say. Let me know, and I'll get that information. I do enough stuff. It's hard for me to keep track of all that stuff. A couple of people today asked me, weird, two people. Ron Murphy being one of them, who is the writer of On Wild Man, and which I reviewed here, and On Dog Man, which I'm reading, which will be at the Book of the Week again. Yeah, there's your plug again, Ron. Asked me about events for next year, and I've slowly trickled a couple of them on there. But as I get stuff, I put them on there, and later on in the year, I'll start compiling more for next year. It's just, I like it. I love these events. I think they really come in handy, and hopefully you like them too. A lot of people don't like them, but trust me, they're great. Good times. You're going to meet a lot of great people, depending upon which one you go to. You got to pick and choose. But I do it as kind of like a free service here to people, because it really ties in what we're talking about here on the show about the paranormal news, getting out there and meeting these researchers that are doing this stuff every day. Get out there. So paranewsinsider.com, check it out. The events tab at the top. So big thanks to everybody again in the chat room. Thank you everybody for showing up. My mom's in there. Hi, Mom. Cindy, producer extraordinaire, who does so much work. I say it every week, but I mean it. She does a ton of work, not just for this show, but all these shows on WCJV. And there's a lot more coming up. So keep an eye on WCJV.com or WCJVradio.com. A lot of new shows, a lot of great information coming your way soon. Soon. And keep listening to this show, obviously, every Tuesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern. So keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the wood, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. Don't be a Joe Nickel. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.